Hey.
I have a question for you. So I've just been going through like our records, and you know, we did that whole thing for Porpoises for a Purpose. You know, they were really excited that we did this for them, and you know, those poor little orcas, they miss their parents. You know, those yachts are terrible.
Yeah, but it's crazy how many scars can appear from like a boat engine on the back of those things. It's awful. It's
absolutely awful. Oh my God. But I just can't account for like $250,000. Like, I don't know where it is. Like,
wow. Well, $250,000. That's so weird. Wow. Wait,
did you
just? It's just gone or something?
Is that a Tesla?
You like it?
That's new. That's right.
It's used. It's used, you know. It's fine. Yeah, it's like a 2020 model. It's kind of old.
Kind of old,
yeah.
That's a really nice Rolex.
Oh, this thing? Oh, it was a gift.
Mm-hmm. And
it was
I see
a gift. 100% a gift.
I see those are brand new Stacy Adams shoes you're wearing.
Ooh, yeah. I got a sugar daddy.
I'm pretty sure I've seen this film before. Jackson, did you take the money for Porpoises for a Purpose?
Oh, no!
I also
vanished.
You can't lie to me with that pure gold chain that you're wearing.
Have you seen my grill?
I'm feeling it. Let's do it. Moose crossings, red hot dogs, missing persons in salty bogs, up to camp with Stephen King, river curses, Wesley sings, homegrown horror.
Welcome to Homegrown Horror. Hey, man, spooky podcast about murder, spooky things. Trick crime horror, ghost schools, goblins. Today is ghost themed.
I love ghost themes.
We haven't had a ghost in a... Well, no, we've had some ghosts recently. We've had some ghosts.
This has been my... The summer has been the season of the ghost and the history for me.
Historical ghosts. So strange. We had quite a lull where we didn't have any ghosts, and ghosts are popping in and out of here. Still not 100% on our ghosts real, but I was actually rewatching a bunch of like the old unsolved ghost episodes, mm-hmm. and like a couple of instances where I'm just kind of like, that one's weird, or this bit of evidence is a little peculiar. And you're kind of like, is ghost real?
Is ghost real? Oh, that's nice to hear from you, actually.
Well, it's just like really a couple, because nice. It's like, my immediate assumption is you're lying. And it's like, but I trust the Boo Boys, Shane Madej and Ryan Bergara, to have a little bit more of a solid take and like an honest take at times on this. But sometimes it's like, is it the production that's a little amping this up a little too much? What's going on here? But sometimes it's like, you see like a bump or a weird whisper.
For that's me, like, it's when they're in Al Capone's cell.
That's fucking crazy. Yeah. Like it was a little bit, the responses followed sort of a logical pattern and had an accent.
It was something. And then the other one for me is the light turning on in the Sally, the flashlight in the Sally house.
There was one that kind of got me, which was the humming in the one of the asylums that they're visiting.
It's so fascinating to hear you say that.
It's just kind of odd.
Yeah.
You know, but it's sort of like, I'm kind of still leaning towards like, not really.
Yeah.
It's like, I could think of a bunch of other explanations to this or that, or this being a coincidence or whatever. It's like, give me a full ghost. Give me a full on, full body apparition.
So today we don't have full body apparitions.
We have people who have claimed to have seen stuff. And again, with a lot of the ghost stories that we end up bringing to the table here, it always ends up being like they said X, or these people said Y. Or
it's been passed down, and it's like, it's, because I remember the one in Kennebunk where there's like actual people's names attached to the stories, and they're like, I saw this, or in the Fort Knox. But then you have stuff like Massacre Pond or Robie Andrews, where it's like, some say, and I'm like, who is some?
Who is some? Who's some?
So I'm ready to crack in.
So we'll crack into this. So we're going to be taking ourselves a little bit up the coast here. Going to be going to Bangor, Maine.
Bangor.
I got on a big old Bangor, like, sort of click hole as I was researching this.
Really?
Yeah, I really did. It was very strange because I was like, because I started changing sort of the way I was searching for some haunted locations. I started focusing more on, rather than just like random stories, I was like, nope, let's focus on locations, because there's so many fucking ghost tours in general across Maine, more than I realized.
Yeah.
I started like found a whole like box of them. I just cracked open the internet. I opened up Bing and I was like, oh shit. God,
not Bing.
Nah, I use Google. It's fine. I cracked open the box and found all these different ghost tours. I found like some mention of a Stephen King tour that is prominent in Bangor. And then I was like, oh yeah, Derry, Maine is Bangor, Maine.
Yes.
Because it's like, I saw, but they were like making a bunch of references to like, oh yeah, the Paul Bunyan statue, or like the Thomas Standpipe is the water tower.
I don't know why I knew that it was Bangor, but my brain, because I remember the Paul Bunyan statue was a Maineism.
Yeah, yeah.
I am a dumbass. Because we talk about the Paul Bunyan statue.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
In the It episode. I'm just, wow.
I just never really thought about it. It didn't
click properly.
To me, it was just kind of like Derry, Maine was supposed to be sort of a conglomeration of many things that like encompass a Maine town. But I was like, oh no, it is meant to be Bangor.
It's meant to be Bangor.
Yeah. So that was enlightening. But anyway, so I started going through things and found, like, yes, there's a lot of Stephen King inspiration in Bangor itself, but there's also a lot of haunted locations in Bangor, Maine that I found out. There's the Bangor Opera House, the Thomas Standpipe. Maybe these will be future episodes.
I did turn down the opportunity to work at the Bangor Opera House.
Ooh.
No, was it Bangor? Nope. It was not the Bangor Opera House. It was the Waterfall Opera House, which probably is also haunted.
Maybe.
If we're being totally honest.
Yeah. I'll have a chance to visit that, probably, at some point. Unless they turn it, destroy it. Who knows?
Oh, dear.
A lot of opera houses in Maine.
There are. Well, yeah, because there's Waterville, Bangor.
Booth Bay.
Booth Bay. There's also.
There's at least one more.
There's also the. City. Biddeford City Theater, which is technically an opera house.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not called Opera House.
Yeah.
My brain was trying to be like, city opera? And I'm like, no, opera singer died there. brain is not like, okay.
So we're going to be talking today about the Thomas A. Hill House. And we're going to be diving into a little bit of the history of the Thomas A. Hill House.
Spooky.
It does. There's actually, I think there's the show called Hill House.
Haunting of Hill House.
The Haunting of Hill House, which is very popular.
But
these
it's
days.
Not related.
This is not related. No, it
but
is
that's
not
probably
related.
Where the but it does sound. It sounds either haunted or like I'm about to have like a Jane Austen style romance.
Absolutely, yes, 100%. You're going to find your Darcy here. So the Thomas A. Hill House today, as it exists, is actually the location and home of the Bangor Historical Society. This is a Greek Revival style home that was commissioned by Thomas A. Hill, who is a lawyer, and it was built and completed in 1836 and designed by the famous architect Richard Upjohn. Who is Richard Upjohn? Do you know? Oh, you had a little face of understanding.
I don't know.
He's best known for his design of New York City's Trinity Church. Bangor Isaac's Farrar Mansion, which I believe is also haunted, which is across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And the original St. John's Episcopal Church. So, guy likes his churches. But yeah, well-known architect, been around the block.
I guess, yeah, if you're an architect, you have a diverse portfolio, but I can't, I'm just imagining Thomas A. Hill being like, hey, you made a nice church, build my house.
It's kind of weird because, like, 1836, architects were probably just getting pussy left and right. Because it's like, you read some of these old historical plaques, like, even I think there's one in Portland that featured, like, a park architect who I knew was very famous and actually designed some parks out west as well.
Yeah.
And, like, made the rounds. And I'm just kind of like, damn, these architects, they're getting to jobs all over the place. Yeah. They're really making bank here. Or not. I don't know. Maybe it's the life of an artist, you know?
I feel like architects probably make more money than most artists. Just, you know, by the virtue of people are usually willing to spend more money on a building than they are on a canvas.
Yeah. So this is this home has changed hands. So originally purchased and built by Thomas A. Hill. Of course, Thomas A. Hill House is now his name. Mm-hmm. It's gone through some iterations. But then in 1846, the home was purchased by Samuel and Matilda Dale, who will be the feature of today's story.
Oh.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about this. But a little bit extra history. Looks like it was about a hotel for a brief period of time, and then it was purchased by the Sons of Union Veterans in 1942, and it was named the Grand Army of the Republic Memorial.
Ooh.
Bit of a weird name, but, you know. And then 1952, the Bangor Historical Society was allowed to use the home, and then eventually it was passed over and deeded in the 70s to the Bangor Historical Society. So right now, it's kept a lot of the original interior, similar to what Samuel and Matilda Dale would have had at the time. Because Samuel and Matilda Dale actually did a lot of renovations to the home when they lived within it.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about who the fuck is Samuel and Matilda Dale.
Yeah, the house isn't named after them.
So he was a mayor of Bangor. He served two different terms.
Okay.
Didn't make it through the second one. We'll get into it.
Oh.
He came to Bangor in Mr. Samuel, sorry, was from Salem, Massachusetts originally. He came to Bangor in 1833 as a sailmaker. So he was involved in the ship business in the area, but he was quite industrious, and he eventually would own his own grocery store and a ship chandlery business downtown. Now, what is a ship chandlery business, you say? That's a great question. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. I don't remember what it is, but I think in the episode where I talked about the last executions in Maine, that was one of the stores that the two men were robbing was the chandlery. Don't know what it is.
So just looked it up. A chandlery, or a ship chandler as a profession, is a retail dealer who specializes in providing supplies or equipment for ships. So sort of like, it's kind of like your Pep Boys of today, but for boats.
It's so weird that there's just, like, a separate name for, like, a boat merchant.
Yeah, it's kind of not even, like, a boat merchant, you know? It's, like, it's just the guy that fills your boat full of barrels or something. It's like, I need 10,000 pickles. I got you, brother. I need, like, 1,000 feet of rope. We got it, you know? I'm sure, like, you know, whatever little gunnels and all that, mm-hmm. you know, sails. I think it kind of makes sense. The trajectory is there. Sailmaker, grocery store, not sure how that came to be.
No.
But I mean, I guess it kind of all fits into the chandlery business. So, very interesting.
All right.
So, that's Samuel. Sorry, Thomas. That's Samuel, you know, industrious guy, well-to-do, was part of the community for a while. You know, was kind of like your sort of run-of-the-mill politician, but was of note that we found within the Bangor Historical Society kind of like a description of him, described him as a politician at heart and a social climber. The guy did care a lot about rubbing elbows with the well-to-do of society.
So he's less of a he's less of a man of the ocean, of the land, and more of a, I'm going to step on everyone to get up.
It kind of seems like that's how people sort of portray him. And people's opinion of Samuel really did sour towards the end.
Ooh. Yeah, because you did... I'm wondering why... Why was his term cut short?
So his first term was in 1863, and he finished it out to 1866. So, like, a 3-year term, that's pretty short. Impressive. I'm glad. Interesting to see that there's a short mayor term here. And then he also started his second term in 1871, but again, didn't finish out the term. Why, you may say?
I do say. Why? I say very profoundly.
So,
why?
As we're kind of getting into this, there's a lot of rumors around the circumstances to the abrupt end of Mr. Samuel Dale's term here. Now, what I know is true is that in 1871, in the fall, there was the Great Chicago Fire.
Mm-hmm.
So what was interesting is that the community of Bangor decided to pool their resources together. Samuel made a big fundraiser event held at his home where he invited the bigwigs of the community and the rich folks to do a little bit of a charitable work. So, very fancy party, made it a whole big thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I see. They got all this together. They raised collectively around $10,000.
What is that in today's dollars?
Let's look it up. Looking it up.
I know, like, because that was...
Inflation calculator.
It is worth looking at the inflation calculator because, like, I remember last episode when I'm like, a paltry $250,000, which is $6 million in today's dollars.
Okay, I'm using a questionable inflation calculator, but I'm sure it's just right. Fine.
It'll get us, hopefully, ballpark.
$10,000 in 1871 is worth $250,000.
Okay, that's a pretty decent amount of money.
Pretty decent. Hey, man, that's like, you can buy
a quarter of a house today.
Or an entire modular home. It is pretty, like, sobering. I've been trying to think about the prospect of buying a home. Not going to be able to do it in Southern Maine, that's for sure.
No.
But if I go mid-coast, I have a better shot.
Do you?
Yeah, but I'm going to live in a modular home. That's the long and short of it, basically. It was just like, wow.
Allegra's parents were trying to get something in the Rockland, Camden, Thomaston area so they would have a place to go. Because part of the issue is, like, a lot of people from, like, New York and stuff are coming and buying pay cash.
And they've already been, like, as far as New Yorkers and from away, like, rich money folks. The Rockland area, that's where a lot of old money is sitting as well.
Yes.
It's already super affluent, so kind of wild to be like, we'll just poke around.
Yeah, they were pretty much like trying to find anything that they could, and it was it's a really rough market if you're right there. But I do know, like, I don't know what Gardner is, but I know Durham's not terrible. As you're heading up that way.
Yeah,
It's a hit or miss, depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah, I'm definitely been, it has been sort of like, definitely going to be either in
there's
a trailer
nice
or
modular.
There's some
nice modular homes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm saying that I'm not knocking them, but it is kind of hilarious that it's like, I think I'm doing okay. And like, this is what I can get. And it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, endless growth just for the sake of growth does not make a sustainable society. So something's got to give, y'all.
Yep. So we have about $250,000.
A modular home.
That they're going to pack up this modular home and send it to Chicago. It is interesting because this is not long after the Portland fire either.
Yeah. Yeah, true, true. So, like, it's kind of interesting. I wonder if they kind of pulled their resources together for the Portland fire. Who knows?
But they could, like, seeing, like, oh, this is what it was like here.
Yeah,
the
so
chaos they, here. They could really use our assistance.
They felt that charitable need to mm-hmm. give to help out
Chicago.
That would actually,
that, I think that that's probably a very reasonable assumption to make.
That tracks, yeah. I think a good observation there.
Sometimes I'm very observant.
So Samuel, of course, this being his whole shindig, his big old party, he needs to be in charge of wiring or sending the dollars over to Chicago to make sure everything's hunky-dory. So this was supposed to be going through the Bangor Bank that was local to the area, shipped over to a Chicago bank.
Supposed to be.
Couple weeks go by, and Chicago says, hey, we know we were supposed to receive some money from y'all, but we don't seem to have it. What's going on? Mm. Then the Bangor Bank was like, we never sent anything over. I'm not sure. So Samuel, you know, he was in charge of this whole thing. They were asking, like, hey, what happened? And they're like, and he's like, I don't know. Nobody knows.
I'm sure.
The money seems to have just vanished. Coincidentally, okay. There are many renovations to the Thomas A. Hill House this year.
Hold on.
Yep.
Pause. What kind of fucking idiot do you have to be to make a public display of your home and you're making this huge, especially if you're a social climber, like you're in the public eye, you're mayor in the public eye. Like you have this reputation of being someone who cares what people think of you because you're trying to get up.
Yeah.
And then you just... I don't even think that this would be called embezzling. This is just straight theft.
Yeah, this is just theft. just straight theft. I mean, it's fraud.
It's fraud. Yes.
Theft and fraud.
Samuel, my guy, how fucking stupid do you have to be?
And it's like, and he had all these like big renovations happening pretty much after this party was going on within this year. So it was kind of like, the community talked quite a bit, and we're like, yeah, he stole it, 100%.
He absolutely stole it.
He was facing quite a rough reputation here. Now, we can't prove that. There's no way to prove this, of course, but... In the eyes of the town, this guy's guilty.
Dead.
Yeah.
Unless he's got some ancestors around that are listening to the pod, and they're like, hey, how dare you?
How dare you
make judgments about my ancestor based on 200-year-old gossip?
You besmirch the damn name.
I don't know if it's 200. It's like
we're getting close to 200.
Math.
Well, I mean, like maybe 150, but you know. But yeah, long ass time ago. Who cares what they had to think? They didn't have iPads. They didn't have the internet.
But I think it's pretty obvious what happened here.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah.
Not a smart move.
So, with his reputation pretty much in the tank, along with the rest of the family, besmirched, Samuel was not doing quite well.
No.
So, the story goes. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the story. I cannot confirm.
Nor deny.
A lot of the events of what I'm about to say. I will also say that I got some good information here from, I'll just shout them out because they had compiled a lot of information and had direct interview with the curator, Ghosts of Caramel. The Caramel Maine is a YouTube channel that compiled a lot of information that I thought was helpful and helped me piece together a lot of the information. I didn't use everything that they talked about, but their interview with the actual curator of the Bangor Historical Society was very helpful to me in corroborating information.
Amazing.
Yeah. So
Shout out to them.
Thank you guys. So, interesting content too. They're very much into ghosts, which is fine.
Ghosts.
So.
You cannot confirm.
Okay, sorry. I cannot confirm and deny the events again. So, on Christmas Eve. Matilda and the children were going off to Mass. Samuel decided to stay home today. Maybe feeling unwell, who knows? Maybe feeling like a little bit of a pussy to show his face in public.
After stealing $50,000.
All that money. All that precious money that was supposed to go to a good cause and families that actually needed it. But
not renovating your stupid house.
But the banister looks so good, B.
I bet it does. But your mayor, use your fucking salary.
Right. Or yeah, he's like, you own a business. What the fuck?
Like, do the thing.
Yeah. Again, bit of a social climber. Like the host. He wanted the things look nice.
So he stays home.
So it goes. It stays home. He stays home. And some say he drank an entire bottle of poison.
What kind of poison?
We don't know. We don't know. That's the story goes. He killed himself. He drank a bottle of poison. We're not really sure. People speculate, the town speculated that he drank a bottle of poison. The fact is, he mysteriously died that day while his family was away.
I think people didn't like him, so they're like, yeah, he did away with himself instead of being like, oh, he was murdered. Like, they were like, nah, he's too, no.
That was the thing, is like, they weren't really sure, but everybody knew this scandal. Everybody knew that his reputation was tarnished. A lot of people just assumed he had killed himself.
At least it's not, I think it's John List. Are you familiar with John List?
It sounds familiar.
So he murdered his whole family because they were having financial trouble. But he ran off and he was like, I gotta get rid of that. Like, I can't tell them that we're having trouble. Like, I gotta just.
So he just killed his whole family instead of like, hey.
Yes.
We gotta default on some stuff.
Correct.
Wouldn't.
I highly recommend, if you're not familiar with that case, like, it is super bananas.
That is bananas.
It is super bananas. But that's what I think, like, when you get a lot of these, specifically family annihilators that are, like, fathers and, like, head of a family, it's usually something stupid, like, I just didn't want to tell them that I had a lot of debt. So at least, you know, if this is what happened and he drank the poison, at least he didn't, you know, lean the other way.
Yeah, to massacre his family. Thank God.
Thank God.
Yeah. Well, I mean, financially,
we'd have way more ghosts if that was the case.
Financially, they seem to be doing okay as a family in general. But yeah, that would be a lot of ghosts. That'd be chock full of ghosts. But anyway, so supposedly he killed himself.
Interesting.
Yeah. And no one really knows. So, like, again,
there's all this. She's at church. What are you talking about?
There's all this speculation. There was all this crazy stuff happening. His reputation wasn't doing well. So, apparently, it went even so far as the life insurance policy that he had, the company was not going to pay out because they assumed he killed himself. That's a violation of the policy.
Yeah.
They went so far as to take his stomach and bring it to the Boston Medical Examiner to take a look to determine the cause of death.
And as we know from the Valerie P. Coolidge case, the stomach is the key.
The stomach is the key. But the results were inconclusive. They could not determine if he had taken any poison
Boston.
At all.
Boston. What?
Yeah, they couldn't determine it was poison or what killed him, actually.
So it's definitely
they couldn't figure it out.
Well, I was going to say, it's definitely not cyanide, but maybe they just have a bunch of doctors that don't have the cyanide smelling gene.
Maybe. Or like, I don't know, there could have been who knows what tests were like back then. I'm assuming back in 1871, when they got a stomach, they just kind of like threw it in the air like they were making pizza dough.
Oh, God, no.
And they were just like, oppa, is there some, and see if any poison falls out. So
I do wonder then what they, like, they must, interesting, okay. I'm just filing that away for later, Brittany later.
So they couldn't find any conclusive evidence of whether or not he killed himself. They couldn't determine the cause of death at all. 1871 science. And the company did pay out the life insurance to Matilda.
Did they feel bad?
I don't know.
They were just
Matilda continued to live in the home along with the family. And I think she pretty much lived there
until she died.
Yeah. I think it stayed in the family for a long while. like multi-generational.
That's kind of what it, yeah. Yeah. It seemed like there was a bit of a gap between.
Yeah, between like, yeah, well, then it was like 42 or something, or even a little bit before that. But yeah, yeah. So, yeah, now we get into the hauntings. Ooh. It is stated that there's some belief that Samuel and Matilda continue to live please, in the home.
Please tell me they're fighting.
No, they're kind of, they're just fucking.
I know!
No, just kidding.
No, if I was Matilda, I would make, if he was haunting the house and I lived a long and peaceful life, I would still make his life a living hell in the afterlife, personally. Based on, I don't, they may have had a great relationship, but your husband's a fuckwad.
Yeah, husband's a fuckwad. So what was very cool, B, is that the Thomas A. Hill House and this story were featured previously on cable television.
Which show?
It was on Haunted History from 1998. Did you ever watch Haunted History?
Mm-mm.
I didn't really get into it. I think that's too early for my
time. I think so, too. Because I was definitely more of a, obviously ghost hunters, but there was one on the Travel Channel that it was like, you know, America's Most Haunted kind of deal.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was like on the Travel Channel.
Yeah. This was a pretty popular show. It ran for 2 seasons. The feature, there was an episode that was dedicated to Maine, and this was one of the stories that they decided to go with.
Ooh, were you able to find the episode at all?
Yes, I did. Well, yes, I won't go into the means, but it involves an eye patch and a peg leg.
I feel like it's, where else are you going to get it?
There was literally nowhere else I could go.
I'm very surprised. Like, I'm surprised you were able to find it at all.
It took a lot of work. And it was bad quality.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Excellent work.
Oh, God. So I did watch it. I watched the segment.
The segment, yeah.
The fucking thing that I was watching was unwatchable. But I watched the segment. The
parts. Oh, my God. Because I remember what it was like when you would record on VHS tapes. I can't even imagine, like, how just deteriorated.
How's it going, Daily Motion? Oh my gosh. Full of just old cable shows and porn. So, very interesting. It was a cool episode, though. I kind of liked how they set it up. It was a well set up show. So, you know, surprised it only went for 2 seasons, but I guess people didn't like Haunted History in 1998 or 99, I guess, at that point. But yeah. People, and even today, there are still some articles that come out, and the people who work at the Bangor Historical Society still have experiences. Some of them, you know, more, like, involved than others. The curator of the Bangor Historical Society has said that often he's had people say to him that they've seen a woman walking the halls, usually kind of out of the corner of their eye or like glancing at a mirror. They'll see a woman behind them and they turn and there's no one there.
I feel like that's, I feel like that's scarier to me.
Right? Yeah, no, that's scarier.
That's scarier to me than like seeing like a full body apparition, because at least then I can confirm.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just sort of like, fuck.
And like, that these are friendly ghosts. So everybody that's kind of involved is like, yeah, they're friendly ghosts. They're a bit of pranksters, though. One individual that worked at the Bangor Historical Society and would claim that, believe that Samuel would often mess around with the office computer. Could you imagine being a ghost and it's just like, what the fuck is this?
Man, this would have made my business so much. Embezzled that money so much better.
Yeah, she says that often she would look at the computer sometimes and see like the mouse moving on its own.
Oh my God.
I think you just got a shitty mouse. I don't know.
But if, what if the mouse itself is moving?
Right, like the mouse itself.
Physical
that,
mouse.
Then that would be a little bit wild. Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. Have you ever done the prank on like your office mate before where you plug in your mouse into their computer?
No.
Done that before. So funny. Gets them so mad.
I personally am not much of a prankster.
Oh, a little prankster. Not as much anymore, but yeah. But yeah, people claim to see the lady. They even say, some say they see a gentleman. One woman had a story of how she was trying to open like a basement door and it was just like lodged shut, wouldn't open. And she said, she's screaming, "Samuel, would you let go of the door?" And the door opened. Immediately. So Samuel's pulling pranks here, you know?
Something that I do appreciate is just sort of like this idea that these ghosts are like baked into the office culture at the historical society.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, oh, Sam.
Oh, Sam.
Sam, I'm going to take you to HR.
That's kind of cute.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah. I like that. That's people, you know, claim shit being knocked off their desk. Things going missing. People also, multiple people have said that they would often smell like perfume randomly or cigarette smoke. Samuel was a bit of a smoker.
Okay.
And who knows? Some people even say they've seen a cat, a ghost cat, which, you
know. Did they have a cat?
I think so. Maybe.
Actually, ghost rules question. Can you choose what form you're in?
That's a good question.
Can I just say, like, man, it would be really cool if I was a cat right now?
It's just really weird to me. Like, again, with ghost rules, I think I've said this before. Why are ghosts wearing clothes?
They should be naked.
They should be naked. Yeah. And it's just kind of weird to me that it's like, yeah, it's like your clothes aren't alive. Why are they on you in your death? Or people, maybe it is sort of just like, this is the form that I'm most comfortable in. So that's what I appear.
I'm surprised, though, like, if that is the case, is like, this is the form I'm most comfortable in, that nobody is, like,
in pajamas.
A nudist ghost.
Yeah, a nudist ghost or, like, in pajamas.
Well, I think one of the ladies in the lighthouse, I think it was Boone Island, the lady in white.
She's probably in pajamas.
Yeah.
I gotta think, though, then.
We see women in pajamas, but not men. We see women in their negligees.
It would be really funny to see a, like, sexy ghost. It'd be really funny to see a guy ghost in, like, just red long johns. Like, you wouldn't be able to take that seriously.
No.
I was thinking if I died and I was, like, abiding by these ghost rules of being in comfy clothes, it's like, no one's gonna take a ghost in a Hawaiian shirt very seriously.
No.
Like, that is not scary at all. Boo! Oh, he seems like a nice guy.
Oh my
He looks
God.
Very festive.
He's festive.
He looks like he's ready for the beach. So, not really like big ghost things happening, not people getting pushed or anything. No,
it's
nothing
more
malicious.
Like innocent little ghost pranks.
Yeah. And so, the Thomas A. Hill House. Lot of supposed ghost sightings in this. It's become a staple of like the many ghost tours that occur in Bangor. And if you go to the normal ghost tour, their first stop is the Thomas A. Hill House. You know, a lot of interesting history, of course, scandal, and then potential hauntings. It's rife for a story, you know? So that's the story of the Thomas A. Hill House and the little haunting that occurs there. So you can go ahead and check it out yourself.
Love it.
It's a cute little one. Nothing really crazy.
I love how we're like, it's a cute little one, but he probably took his own life.
Yeah, he probably died. I mean, time heals all wounds.
I feel like that's the thing with old-timey ones is
we feel less bad.
You feel less bad because there have been times where I'm like, wow. It's the same on a lot of other podcasts too where it's like, well, we have the freedom to be a little bit more goofy about it.
100%.
Whereas, you know, for example,
when it comes to like the more recent ones, it's kind of, there are some times where I'm like, should I even talk about this?
Should I even, I don't know.
It's like, I don't know how to be funny here, you know. But, you know, I think we've gotten over a lot of our trepidations over time.
Well, because I think the fact of the matter is that, because I always think of my favorite murder, they're always like, the humor is not, we're not making fun of the victims. It's finding humor outside of the story to lighten it, but also get it out there.
It helps that we are like ADHD brain, you know? We can find these random connections to funny things.
Now, I would like to go visit this house. I would like to see all of those amazing renovations.
I want to see where all that fucking money went. Yeah. Show me that banister, baby! Let me see that living room. Oh, nice wallpaper.
And then we could post it on the Instagram. Yeah, because Allegra and I took a trip to Peaks Island and we visited a former Mainism alum.
I saw it. Loved it.
They were really nice. Huh. So I would love to go visit and maybe we could, you know, we could get a little reel interviewing Samuel and Matilda.
I think we could. Yeah, let's get bust out the old EMP.
Yes.
Mark Bishop, the curator or the director, will, I don't know if he'll be super keen on that. But,
no, probably not.
He's used to answering all these ghost questions. I'm sure he gets tired of it, you know. But, you know, you gotta give the people what they want.
I'm trying to remember. Oh yeah, it's the Booth Bay Opera House. How they're like, yeah, but we don't think it's haunted. Like the
yeah, they're very much like this isn't haunted.
This is not haunted.
Yeah, the Matt Bishop kind of leans into it more. It seems the director, he's kind of like, yeah, a lot of people say they see something, and I mean like, yeah, it feels kind of weird at times. It's like, but it doesn't seem like he's seen anything.
Can you see by this ghostly light?
But that is the Thomas A. Hill House. But, you know, lot of history here. And I guess there's a lot of history in our next Mainism. There you go. How about that for a segue?
No,
hey!
I have a better
segue. Oh, you got
segue.
One? Okay, go.
Yes, we'll leave that hey and it's funny. You know, there's a lot of history, there's a lot of story, and Maine is chock full of storytellers, just like our next Mainism.
Hey, hey, it's a Mainism. That was a good one. Oh, I'm just so brain dead today.
I'm brain dead every day these days.
Oh, man. So, yeah, today we're going to be talking about the famous... Because there's a reason for this, right? Because the exhibit of his...
The reason why I had thought of it was, Maddie's Theater, which is a part of the Children's Museum of Maine, which is now on Thompson's Point, they just closed their most recent production of Charlotte's Web.
Wow.
So Charlotte's Web is a very well-known children's book.
Yeah.
They're movies. The first movie is way better than the second movie, just so you know. But also, E.B. White, the author, also wrote Stuart Little.
Wow!
Which also, as everyone knows, was a major motion picture. But did you know that Mr. E.B. White is a Mainer?
Really? He lived in Maine?
Yeah.
Interesting. It says he was born in New York.
Yeah, but he lived in Maine.
He lived in Maine for like most of his life then. So he kind of came up here at one point. Looks like he went to Cornell. Oh, he was like briefly in like the RU, sort of the SATC training.
Yep. He died here in Brooklyn, Maine.
Brooklyn,
Maine.
Wild, yeah. Well, I mean like... We are all familiar with the Charlotte's Web series. I didn't know that he did the Stuart Little stuff as well. That's pretty amazing. Those are both stories that make you cry. You know? Stuart Little, a little bit.
The end of Stuart Little is weird.
Stuart Little's... This has been said before, I think. But it's a little fucked up that a family goes to an orphanage and adopts a mouse over the human children.
So he married Catherine Angel, and they had a son, Joel White, and he was a naval architect and boat builder. Link that back to Samuel.
Nice.
And he actually owned Brooklyn Boat Yard.
Oh, wow.
In Brooklyn, Maine.
Okay.
Yeah, they are.
E.B. White did?
No, his son.
Oh, his son did. Okay.
Yeah. Later in life, he developed Alzheimer's, and he died October 1st, 1985, in his farm home in North Brooklyn, Maine.
That is scary. That's scary. Alzheimer's. Like, especially an author who spends a lot of their time thinking and, like, developing the stories. You feel like, what's the key to preventing that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to do a lot more Sudoku?
I mean, that's what the... Did you ever play Brain Age?
Yes, actually. Yeah.
So I'm sure New York would be like, hey, he's ours. But you know what? We claim him for the latter part of his life.
Yes. We were there when he died. We got to see him deteriorate.
And his like bloodline continues on in Maine.
That's good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So and I still... do think he did inspire a lot of other Maine authors.
Oh, of course, yeah. The E.B. White estate lives on.
It does. The other one, yeah, because they actually talk about... No, sorry.
Charlotte's Web was such like an iconic part, I think, of my childhood as well as yours. But it was just like the VHS, the old VHS movie was just like always present, like wherever you went. Such a wholesome story, but also like kind of terrifying that the only thing that's going to save this pig is a spider.
Yeah, spooky. Just what? Why?
Yeah, why so scary?
Why so scary?
It's a little traumatizing, but I guess kind of a lot of older kids' media was back in the day. At least the pig didn't die at the end. It wasn't like Old Yeller, you know?
So his farmhouse, like his farmhouse, still stands as well. Like it is, it's called the E.B. White House.
Oh, sick! Where's that at? In Brooklyn?
Yes, it is in Brooklyn, and represent. It looks like in 2022 it was up for sale.
Oh shit.
So the E.B. White House is a historic... This is from Wikipedia. The E.B. White House is a historic house on 470 Bay Road in Brooklyn, Maine, United States. It is a well-preserved 18th century farmhouse. It was the home for many years of to author E.B. White, and is where he wrote a number of his important works. The farm was an inspiration for one of his best-known works, Charlotte's Web. There you go.
There you go, motherfuckers.
See, I just had to hit the Wikipedia page about him, not super forthcoming about his connection to Maine besides dying there. So thanks to the E.B. White House Wikipedia page.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes.
We got the connection.
But yeah, so I love that it's... I really love that it is like specifically the inspiration for the farm in Charlotte's Web.
It's wild that it isn't like a museum that someone can just like buy it privately.
Yeah.
But I guess like we shouldn't be just making every famous person's house into a museum.
Yeah, I guess not.
But I mean like I thought that, and I was like, oh man, could we buy his famous person's... Could we buy the Stephen King house?
I don't think he's letting that go. That's going to be like his children.
He should deed it to us. It'll be the new homegrown horror studio HQ.
I'm trying to look. The house was built in the 1700s. So it old.
It old.
Yeah, and he lit... Let's see.
He was in the 40s, right? Or earlier, was it?
He died in 1985.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so he was more present within the 40s, 50s.
I want to know who... So it was for sale. I want more information about the sale of this house. Oh, it's a nice little house. There you are.
Let me see that house.
It's a lovely little picture from this. I don't know if this is a blog.
Seems like a blog.
NewEngland.com.
NewEngland.com.
They've got a nice little article about the house after it went up for sale.
Oh, this is beautiful. Look at that.
It's really pretty.
This is a very nice
home. It reminds me of Allegra's house.
This is her parents' house. This is just a tad outside our budget.
No, probably.
Just a tad.
Just a little.
Just a little bit.
I mean, I don't know how expensive it is because So, yeah.
You can't beat that view.
Absolutely not. Shit. So, I am saying E.B. White, Charlotte's Web, they're ours.
He belongs to us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Homegrown Horror. You came here for the laughs and the ghouls. We had a blast doing it. You can go ahead and ask us any questions or comments or leave your complaints at home.
You can tell us how much you, like, what are your favorite memory? Like, where were you when you read Charlotte's Web. Do you love some pig? Are you more of a Stuart Little kind of person? Let us know at homegrownhorrorpod@gmail.com.
Also, I think it's on Spotify, but if you scroll down that little page on the Spotify, you can probably see a question opening up asking you what you think of this episode. You don't need to tell us what you think. You could put whatever the fuck you want down there. So you could leave us a question down there if you wanted.
You totally could. You can also reach us at homegrownhorrorpod on Instagram. And you can also leave us a review or some stars at Apple Podcasts.
Or wherever the hell else there's a review system, because we're not sure.
Yeah, we're not sure. But as always, you don't have to do any of that. We're just really happy that you're here along for the ghoulish ride.
You better keep listening. That's what we're saying. You better keep listening. We'll know. We'll know if you forgot about us.
Please don't forget about us.
Bye.